Good morning, everyone. India is going through some very challenging times with the second wave of the virus. A lot of fear, death, apprehension all around. And it is in times like this, when one has an anchor, whatever the anchor may be, whatever the spiritual path may be, as Shirdi Sai Baba says, it takes us across the ocean of existence. When I was on my journey, I came across big words: enlightenment, self-realization. And I will never forget when my teacher Rameshji asked me, when I had just started seeing him, "Do you want enlightenment? Do you want self-realization?" And I looked at him quite perplexed. And I said, "Apologies, but I don't even know what these terms mean." And he said, "All right, forget these big words." And then he said, "Whether a human being knows it or not, all that the human being wants is peace of mind." That was simple. And that became my benchmark, my measure. Where does peace of mind lie? Then, along life's journey, I met quite a few masters, yogis, people with special gifts, and some would say, "Let me teach you this practice." Some would say, "Come follow me." At one point I thought, is there something else besides peace of mind which is so alluring? I was wondering, has what Rameshji said, is it true? Or is there something else? And at that time, I hadn't even begun reading much in terms of spiritual books. But I found one sentence of none other than Ramana Maharshi. I still remember, etched in my memory, it was from talk 146 of the book Talks with Ramana Maharshi, where he says, "The state of equanimity is the state of bliss." Full stop. And from that point on, I knew that what I am looking for is the bliss of equanimity. Nothing more than that. That's what we all are looking for, whether we know it or not. an equanimity that does not depend on what happens in life, but on our attitude to life. I will read out one email I have received, which is very relevant to what's happening today in India and across the world in various measures. In light of the teaching, this is someone who has been tremendously impacted by the teachings, has been following them, has seen the difference it has made in her life. And here is her question. I try to live my daily living through this teaching, that is, and have started to believe that every minute consciousness is working through and through me, and no thought or no action is done without its intervention. Now my question is, if everything happens through divine will, then why are human beings blamed for the corona crisis or any other crisis for that matter? I have heard many people say that because humans have caused harm to Mother Earth, the animals around, and other things through their actions and their ignorance, that's why a new world is coming into emergence. The COVID crisis is teaching everyone certain lessons and to live that way. But the main question is that even though all this is happening, still the cases are increasing day by day and everything seems out of control. In many of your talks, you have said that the corona has taught us that nothing is in our control. And we have to give away this power of trying to control things. Now I get stuck at this juncture. When the all-encompassing is functioning through each and everything, then this happening is also happening because of the divine will. How can humans be responsible for that? Getting that understanding and at the same time being negligent all depends on God's will. Because every conditioning given to us is also His will. In a recent podcast of Siddha Rameshwar Maharaj, you said that everything starts within our own consciousness. But when all there is that one consciousness, how are we responsible for this? Someone who has obviously gone very deep into understanding the teaching. And the mind comes up with these natural questions. Life and living, daily living, means thinking, feeling, and acting. This is for everyone. That is the mechanism of daily living. Ultimately, everything is the will of the source. There's no question about that. But does this condone negligent behavior? If that is meant to happen, it will happen, yes. But we lose sight of one important thing. Let's take a parallel example. Let's take the law of mathematics, which is a complete law. One could call it a law, a science, whatever you wish to call it. Now a student is learning math, makes mistakes in multiplication, in equations, which is the process of learning. A student has a teacher, the teacher teaches the student. If a student makes a mistake in an equation, does it mean that there's a mistake in mathematics as a law? Or isn't it a mistake in the understanding of math. And so the student practices, tries his best, and that becomes the process of aligning with the law so that the equations add up, the sum totals add up, and one is in alignment. With the source. This is life and living. This does not mean that if I've made a mistake in an equation, I put the pen down and I say, God's will to be negligent. God consciousness, the source, is operating through each and every aspect of its creation, bringing it into alignment, which is called the journey home, where each instrument has a role to play. For example, some play the role of doctors, some play the role of patients. They are being played by consciousness. So it is the thinking mind of the ego which tries to reason this whole thing out that, oh, if all there is God, that means if I am negligent, it is God's will, and so be it. God can never be negligent. It is an aspect that is finding its way back home, that is learning, that is seeking, that is finding. And as Ramana Maharshi said, that invariably it is through the blows one receives in life that one comes on to the spiritual path. And negligence will have its consequences. One is not absolved of the consequences because it is God's will to be negligent. That is the law of life. Now, when it comes to harming the planet, harming animals, can you really imagine harming your own mother? No, my mother. I can't imagine it. But we can harm Mother Earth and all its creations. The human being gifted the most intellect causes the most harm. But if the understanding is that all there is consciousness, can consciousness harm itself? Would it really want to harm itself? There is this concept of the door of consciousness. What is allowed through that door? Thoughts of hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, arrogance, pride, condemnation, criticism. Is that allowed through the door of consciousness, which disturbs the peace of mind? It is a spiritual teaching or concept that comes as an act of grace and creates a filter. And one finds that all this kind of thought is now not penetrating inside, not filtering through. And when the thinking mind of the ego is not mired in all this, it is the pure light of presence that is the content of one's consciousness. The kingdom of God is within me. and where I stand is on holy ground when I contemplate the presence and power of God, is referring to the presence of presence, of consciousness. Not the me and my story. When our thinking mind is not full of all this garbage, we are standing on holy ground. We are at peace with what is. So if you are drawn to this teaching of Advaita, what draws you is this quality and sense of peace. Let that be the measure in your life, in your day, in your relationships, with what goes on in your mind. Especially in times like this, we are all in this together. How consciousness is forcing us to acknowledge this fact, to hold each other's hands. Everyone's pain is our pain. Everyone's laughter is our laughter. There is only one. In Kashmir, outside Srinagar, is a bird sanctuary called Dachigam. If you climb a bit, it's huge, it's massive. If you climb a bit, at a particular time of the year, which is in autumn, there is one spot, not easy to find, known by very few, which is called Jannat Ka Darwaza, the door of paradise. At that time of the year, if one stands in that spot, the profusion of the various colors of the trees, the forests, the entire spectrum of shades is seen all around. And in the early days, it is said that that is where a musk deer would come and the smell of musk would fill the air and one would be transported into a different dimension. That dimension is here and now, as Bhagwan says, the state of equanimity is the state of bliss. Simple. Is our doctor friend Vandana there with us today? Vandana, are you there? If Vandana comes, I'd like to talk with her, and if anyone else meanwhile has anything to share or would like to ask, then we can do so now. Yes, Holger.
Yes, hello, Gautam.
Hello, Holger.
Hello. I wanted to say something, but then the words don't really come in regard to COVID. All information I get are through secondhand. I don't have no immediate experience about anyone in my circle being hospitalized or dying. And I just know that our Western medical system is a big industry that makes trillions of dollars. And I just have a hard time getting excited about COVID as a real threat. To me, it's just an expression of human ignorance, of not knowing life or themselves, and therefore just, yeah, it's just all of humanity's confusion being displayed right now. And I think it has many benefits. Maybe that's good enough. Maybe that's more I don't know right now.
Yes, Holger, but what you say is true, but when there are people who are directly impacted by losing their loved ones to COVID, and there are many, many in India because of our population itself, in the US, where you have not had a direct contact with what has happened. Here we see it with near and dear ones on the television. There is a lot of grief and pain. It's only those who are directly impacted by it feel that. Yes, you are absolutely right that there is an entire industry which also thrives on this, which has gone to limits of human greed and right to the edge of reason and rationality. But these are all various aspects of the functioning of the one source. And since time immemorial, with the plague, with so many diseases in the past, pandemics, etc., this has been a cycle which has kept coming back and back. And I feel that this is the first time in the history of humanity that because of technology, one has exposure to the collective suffering, which is really a call to wake up. So it does certainly have its role to play in waking us up and out of the confusion. But it's a hard lesson. Corona means crown.
The crown of ignorance. Yes, maybe I'm just arrogant or ignorant, but it's just the fact that everything I receive is out of second hand. And like Eckhart Tolle maybe would say, the pain body is having a party. Something like this. And I don't want to be respectless. And I just admit I don't have any direct contact.
Sure.
This is just my own point.
Sure.
And many beautiful things happened, at least to me, through all of this lockdown and through this confrontation with death. And yeah, it's really a time for waking up. And it's beautiful.
It is. It is a time for waking up or getting sucked into the drama of the me.
Yes.
It is really a time, truly, truly. And it is a gift, as you rightly said, in a sense, for those of us who are really questioning and looking at what is all this about. But through pain, through suffering come the lessons. That is the way it is. Okay, Holger, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Indira.
Namaste, Gautamji.
Namaste.
So as Holger has said, we realize that there is less time considering the situations right now. We do not know how the next day is going to be for all of us. So this longing that since we have less time, the time which we have is very less to get to the ultimate realization. So this is kind of bothering me. And among all this, I'm not able to inquire. I'm not able to sit silent. There's so much happening around. So how do you bring that thing that, you know, you are at peace with yourself first before even going into the inquiry part?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So forget the inquiry part. Forget getting the ultimate realization. We are talking of peace here and now in this moment. Not as a future goal which results in enlightenment or self-realization or the ultimate realization. Where is the peace to be found now amidst what is going on? That this could not have happened unless it was the will of the source. You see, our first battle, Indira, is I don't believe the source can do this. This is a man-made thing. This is this, this is that. What has appeared in awareness is actually already accepted by us, else it would not appear. So where is the peace to be found? That this is what is happening right now. I may not like it. Fear may arise. The mind creates drama. The mind creates stories. All that is witnessed. Witnessing is happening. But when one starts from the position of accepting that whatever happens is God's will, seems very harsh at this time. Tears arise, sadness arises, fear arises. So be it. But our battle with all this is over. And then, from that position of witnessing, we then do whatever it is we think and we feel we should do. So as Joel Goldsmith says, we lay down our sword. We lay down our sword. We are not battling with what is. Confronted with what is, we do our best in a given situation, knowing that what happens thereafter is not in our control. So a large part of the psychological suffering gets eliminated this way.
So there is a certain attachment, right, with everything around us. So should we maintain a little distance or detach for a little while? Because only when you accept the situation, the detachment comes. And
nothing that you do can bring about detachment. The doership itself is the attachment. Witnessing brings about the detachment. You cannot do anything to be detached. It is the witnessing that brings about the detachment. The ego cannot say, I am going to do something so that I am detached from what is happening. Because then the ego is exercising its own volition. And the whole foundation of ego is doership. Now it thinks I can do something to be detached. That will not happen. Something or the other it will get attached to. Witnessing, which is absolutely neutral, with no doership involved, witnessing the antics of the mind. How it does these somersaults, these cartwheels, how it's trying to avoid a situation, how it's trying to run away. It just has to be witnessed, Indira. Witnessing has to be allowed because witnessing is happening in any case. But it is the ego which figuratively sits upon that witnessing and says, now I can do something to be detached. Detachment happens. Does that answer your question or would you like to clarify anything a bit more?
So, yeah, I kind of got it. So witnessing is already happening.
Yes.
So I think I'm feeling a little detached when I see that there is nothing in my control, but that again is not for long. Like it immediately something else comes up and again seeks your attention and you again get entangled with that situation.
That is the way the mind works precisely, and that can only be seen. No attempt needs to be made to disallow that from happening. It is the seeing, the constant seeing of how it operates, which brings that about. It's amazing because, you know, in witnessing, you really see how the mind hooks on to things which it derives its sense of self from. If one thing collapses, it gets on to something else. Then that goes, then it gets on to something else.
And it's very quick, like the thought, the shift of thought from one thought to other is so quick that, you know, when, even when you sit and think that for the next 1 minute, I'm not going to think, it doesn't happen. I mean, the shift is so soon.
Just shows we have no control over what the next thought will be and when it will be. Amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Nothing can be done. You just have to watch.
Yes. But we are so, the ego is so tuned into doing that it becomes, it's more like a knee-jerk reaction. I must do something. That is why Maharaj would say, it is not what you do, but what you stop doing that matters.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to share something? Yes, Abhishek.
Hi, good morning, Gautam. So, first of all, thank you for giving us such lovely talks.
Thank you.
And so I started reading, you know, The Power of Now. Uh-huh. And as you mentioned, witnessing the thought. So, even Eckhart Tolle mentioned that with witnessing the thinker, I think. Right?
Mm.
So what exactly does it mean? I'm trying, it's getting hard to understand that. How do you witness, like a thought arises and then when you get into the thought, you know, it expands again into the future, present, yes. The horizontal, vertical. So when you say witnessing the thinker, so you really have to get up of the thinker, right?
Not really.
So how does one witness that?
There's no above, there's no below. There's no front and there's no back. Who is this person called Abhishek who knows that a thought arose? And who is this person who knows that the thought led to thinking? Something knows that, right? Something was aware that thoughts arise. And sometimes my mind gets carried away with a thought and runs to the future or into the past. That something is the witness. It is already there, ever present. You can't do anything to be the witness. The witness is only recognized. So supposing you were sitting for just 5 minutes with your eyes closed, okay? Maybe one thought comes, another thought comes. Oh, I have to do something in the day. I must go to the bank and withdraw money. Oh my God, I was involved in that thought. Then no thought comes. Then another thought comes. And then something else. Oh, I have to call this person up. There is a screen on which all this is taking place. That gets recognized, recognized. The spotlight is going back now. First, it was projected outwards. Now, suddenly when I sit quietly for 5 minutes, I realize that all this show is going on and I'm aware of it. I am the one who's aware that my mind attaches to a thought that runs away into the past or future. I am the one who's aware that some thoughts come and go immediately. I am the one aware that for 30 seconds there was no thought. That is the witness. So nothing can be done to be the witness. The ego cannot be the witness.
So I think
absence of the doership in the ego is the witnessing.
So I think that's rightly what is happening.
Too complicated?
No, not at all, not at all. Actually, I think I was not able to relate that this is exactly witnessing, because exactly this is happening. Earlier, what used to happen is like there had been so many thoughts, I used to get carried away. Now, whenever a thought is occurring, and midway I stop it, I say, oh, this, I'm going in the past or future. Then I'm again present. So I think this is witnessing, and I was not able to correlate to it.
Yes, but you are not stopping it. It is the awareness which says, my God, one had run away with the thought and created thinking. It is the ego which is running away with the thought. So the ego is not going to be able to look back and say, oh, I ran away with the thought. You're running away with a girl somewhere and you're not going to look back and say, oh, I ran away. It is the witness. Awareness cuts off the involvement in the thinking.
So that is precisely being present, right?
Yes. The ego cannot do that. The ego is the one, the thinking mind of the ego is the one running away from it. When the recognition happens, the realization happens, my God, I was just involved in horizontal thinking. That is the witness. So any effort as such to do things, to be the witness, can actually take us further away.
That was happening to me because somehow a negative thought came in the morning and I was trying to stop that and it kept on increasing.
Exactly.
Then I understood the point. Okay, let me just think about it or just witness the thinker. And then again, you know, it was hard to understand, but yes, I think closely or slowly I'm reaching to that point maybe. I think it's individual's journey and it's taking its own course.
Of course.
And one more thing, Gautam, I would like to ask you in the book, I think you only mentioned that, maybe Eckhart Tolle mentioned that you are the space in which things happen, right?
Yes.
So could you please put some light on it?
That's the same thing. I'm glad you mentioned this because that is the witness.
Okay.
You are not what happens. You are the space in which things happen. Whatever happens in your life, all your ups and downs, highs and lows, they are appearing, so to speak, within your consciousness. All the dualities of life, the pleasures and pains, good times, sad times, up and down, front and back, whatever is happening, you are the space in which it is happening. That is the witness. So you are not what happens. Because if you were what happened, there would be no witness. So it's a pointer that whatever happens, let's take your birthday. How old are you?
I'm 33 years old.
Now, when you were 30, when you were 25, when you were 20, when you were 18, what happened? Today, my birthday is my birthday. I am 18 years old. Today, I am 22 years old. Today, I'm 30 years old. Who is 18? Who is 20? And who is 30 years old? That is the witness, the awareness that the body is 18, the body is 22, the body is 25. But does the witness have any age? The witness is the witness. It is always ever present. So, with the spiritual journey, with the power of now, for example, what does the book expose? Or even Eckhart's second book, A New Earth, it exposes the antics of the ego, which tries its best to move away from witnessing. Because it gets identified with things, people, and events in its life and creates the drama of life. And so what Eckhart does is he exposes the antics of the ego. And when the ego is exposed, you are standing in the now. Because all there is this pure, beautiful presence, which for now has been given the name Abhishek as identified consciousness. But when Abhishek is no longer indulging in this imaginary story of his, he is available to be present to what is.
Right, because very rightly he mentioned that there is never past, there is never future. All that is happening is now.
Yeah.
Very rightly said.
Okay.
Thank you, Gautam. Thank you so much.
Which part of India are you in?
I'm in New Delhi, Gautam.
Okay. Things are tough there, I believe.
Things are tough there, but we are at home. Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're trying to be safe.
Yeah. Take care.
Thank you, Gautam.
Yes, Priyam.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I don't have a question. I just want to share my experience.
Sure.
The understanding that I am not the doer, I'm not the thinker, is seeping in more deeply. It seems to be a process, so it's happening, but it seems to be happening at a very deep level now, because it feels like it was so simple and it's always here. How can we even miss it? You know, it's like I am not consciously creating the next thought. I'm not doing it. I am not doing all these actions. I'm already programmed a certain way, and the movie is already written, and I'm just acting out. If someone were to give me the responsibility of only beating my heart for the next 1 minute, I will forget. I'll kill myself. I'll actually die because I'll forget, because it's not possible for me to even beat my own heart for 1 minute.
Mm.
So it's just, it's very liberating in a way. It's very much like that you play in and you dance in life, but you are also detached from whatever happens. You don't mind whatever happens. And a lot of the psychological suffering of guilt and shame and I should have done better, I should have known better, that drops. So that's like my current experience. And I would like to thank you for all your teachings and the way you deliver everything. Thank you.
Thank you. That's fantastic. You shared it so clearly. And when Krishnamurti was the one who said, my secret is that whatever happens, I don't mind what happens.
Yeah.
I don't mind what happens. Okay, beautiful. How is your artwork and your painting going?
It's going slow, mm-hmm. because I only paint when I'm really in the zone.
Yes.
But I love it. I'm very thankful for the freedom I have in life and not having a proper office corporate job. And
you're blessed.
No disrespect to anyone who has a job and everything. It's just not me to, you know. So I'm very thankful and very grateful in life for everything.
You know, you mentioned that you paint when you're in the zone. And my teacher, Rameshji, would often refer to a Russian ballet dancer was very famous decades ago, called Nijinsky. And he loved one sentence of Nijinsky, which was, Nijinsky said that Nijinsky dances best when Nijinsky is not there.
Wow.
When there is no Nijinsky as the individual ego doing the dancing is when Nijinsky dances best.
That's beautiful.
It is. It is. Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have anyone else, or are we done with the hand raising? All right. For some of you who might not be aware, the next Sunday talk is a joint talk with my mother. If you all are interested in the subject of the subtle body, how it functions, how relations impact the chakras and the kundalini, and what is the inner journey of life, which is by someone who has experienced all this for herself, she will share some of her insights, and I'll be sitting alongside her. I don't know why poor Priyam is being shown all the time. If the view can be switched That would be good. And there would be a talk, especially on Bhagwan Raman Maharshi's teachings coming up in May, where I will choose some quotations of Bhagwan and speak about them. All right. Let's see all of you. The gift of silent sitting is so underrated. As Bhagwan said, if words can be so powerful, then how much more powerful can the silence be from where they emerged? The four stages of speech, Parda, Pashyanti, Madhyama, Vekhari, the source, silence, thoughts start sprouting, take the form of words in one's mind and then come out from the lips as words. If we were to really watch the process in slow motion, you would see these four stages. But what gets missed is the silence of the speaker and the silence of the listener, which is always ever present. The ground on which speaking and listening is happening. Can my silence be different from your silence? Do we meet others in silence? Or do all our judgments, thinking, start rotating in our minds when someone is in front of us? Can we be that space for the expression of an aspect of consciousness? Or are we ready with our arsenal of opinions, views, judgments, and so on?